Welcome to the Renovate Gang Podcast, episode 203. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Love that guitar.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, that's surf music. I love
it. Is Phil Wilson.
Hello.
That's it? Hello? Aren't you supposed to abuse us verbally or something?
No, not at all. No.
Oh, hello. Come on, man.
I thought that was a nice choice of music today. I knew Graham would like that.
It was of the surf category because I thought, geez, I'd love to be in Hawaii or California.
Oh, well, then move. We don't need you here. Just get out.
Go. I know. Hey, we could do this. I could be in Hawaii. We could do this show. Just sure. The time would be a little bit odd for me, but
just have to call it Hawaii-vate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, here's what's going on in Maui today and technology.
Nothing.
Yeah. Hey, they actually have a high-tech community over there.
Do they?
I investigated that whole thing. Yeah. I don't know how it's doing now, but oh yeah, there's high-tech in Hawaii.
Well, I'll go over and cover that beat.
They're working on some bitching new wax for the boards, brah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, actually, I had a guy that I knew well who, when he got out of the service, he opened up an audio store there, and then pretty soon he had three stores.
And Maui?
On the islands.
On the islands, okay.
And he said the issue was people would come over from the mainland, and they'd work like mad for about 6 months, and he said then all of a sudden one day, they just, like, the manager wouldn't show up to open up the store. And he said, being like, where the hell were you today? Oh, man, the waves. Oh, Jesus.
Yep.
Took his board out and was surfing.
Had to do some surfing, brah.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why we're so productive here in Minnesota, because we, you know, we're like, let's just work. There's nothing to do.
We ain't got no surf, except we do up on the big lake. And guys bail out of work all the time.
To go surf Lake Superior?
And drive up there. Yep. They'll leave in the middle of the night, you know, like 3:30 to be up there for dawn patrol. Oh, and some of them will actually surf for an hour or two, turn around, drive back and go to work and show up late. It's crazy, but it happens.
Wow. I gotta be dedicated.
Graham, how often do you surf?
I don't really much anymore. You know, since I sold the place in San Clemente, I haven't been out in Southern California for gosh, nigh on a year. And I don't go out on the big lake. I've been out there paddle boarding, but I'm not a cold water guy. I'm too old for that stuff. You got to be in really, really good shape if you're going
to. Well, not only that, but you got to know how to save yourself. Cause I used to scuba dive up in Superior all the time and would wear a uni suit, which is a dry suit. So you'd have long underwear on underneath. And I got to tell you that it is so frickin' cold. Oh my God. Yeah. You make one mistake and that's it. It's hypothermia all day long.
Well, luckily we've never lost a surfer up there, but they wear wetsuits. The new technology is such that they can survive out there, you know, with hoodies, gloves and boots. And I'm amazed that some of them stay out an hour and a half, 2 hours in a session. Now, I don't know if that's in the coldest weather, but that's a long time to be out. Even in the ocean in Southern California, you start feeling it if you're out there more than an hour, you know. So I don't know how these guys do it, but, you know, I bow down to them. They are a hardy bunch, but they're also in very good shape. Did you know that freshwater, you're not as buoyant as you are in salt water?
Yeah.
Right. So you got to work harder. You know, it's harder to paddle, but but yeah, go Google Lake Superior surfing sometime and check out Stony Point surfing. That's the favorite spot up there, about a half an hour north of Duluth.
Yeah,
some great waves up there if you're up for it. And
some
more and more people
tasty
are getting into
waves.
It. Yep.
Amen. Hey, Phil, you were at this JMU 16 thing this week doing some kind of a panel. But what can you tell us what the event was and then what your panel was all about?
Java Meetup 612 is a group that was put together by Joel Carlson and some other folks have put that together. Okay. They've been doing that for a long time, and it got really big, and then they moved into a you know, moved it around a little bit last year, and now they're, you know, it's scaled back a little bit, and they're moving back to Urban Bean. And I believe it's like the second Thursday of every month or something like that. But yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And what's they the, were, so the intent is obviously not Java, the language, but Java, no, Java the thing the you drink.
Yeah. The coffee. Yes,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so it's not all Java developers. I was trying to figure out, why would Java developers be interested in a podcasting session? Okay, now I get it.
Now you get it. There you
okay.
go.
Yeah, because they've got to do stuff like, okay, now you enter semicolon. Okay, now you enter the greater than sign. It's a hot podcast.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, yeah, go so ahead, Phil.
Sorry. We chatted about podcasting, and Pamela Muldoon was there. Irish girl, Megan from Clockwork was there. And a gentleman by the name of, I can't remember Brett's last name, was who's with NPR. And we were just talking about podcasts. And, you know, podcasts, I think the question
Brett
was.
Brett Baldwin?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, okay.
You know, had, you know, the power and influence of podcasting, et cetera. So we chatted a lot about that. We also chatted, I brought up briefly at the end that lovely patent troll suit that's floating around out there now with somebody that's trying to once again claim podcasting as a patent. So
that's got to make Adam Curry and Dave Weiner mad, you know?
It's got to make them mad. It's just going to annoy the snot out of people like Leo Laporte and Adam Carolla that have, you know, incredible amounts of numbers of podcasters. And it's like, how can you bring up you know, try to start suing people for podcasting patent infringement when the patent was issued in 2012 and podcasting has been going on for years?
Yeah.
There's a process patent that a friend of mine who started an online education engine had faced, and that was if you do a poster frame, you know, like a splash page or splash screen on a video, and then if it fades to content, and then it fades to several slides, and then fades to content, that was actually a process patent that was granted for video.
Oh boy!
And it's, you know, he just said, you know, I'm sorry, there's about 8 billion pieces of prior art, but what's the patent office thinking?
Yeah, I don't know.
Unbelievable.
It's just kind of screwy. But, you know, you remember back in 2009, Volo Media tried to do that as well.
Right.
It's like, oh, my God, people.
Well, you were involved with that.
The Association of Downloadable
Media. Right. Yeah, so you were really even more aware of stuff than most.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at this podcasting panel,
yes,
did you ask for a show of hands of how many people had heard of Minovate and what percentage of the audience had?
I always fear that. No, I never ask about that.
Or did you recruit a new listener? That's what I wanted.
You know, I mentioned the name a couple of times. You know, I was standing, you know, Pamela Muldoon, who's Next Stage Startup Podcast. She's got a little group of people that she podcasts and talks about content marketing and things like that. Oh. You know, she has a whole great plan of, you know, how to utilize podcasts, how to segment them up, how to use them, and how to promote them, and all sorts of things that she went into great detail. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, we got to do some of this stuff. This
You mean she actually has a business model? Oh my
yes,
God.
She does. I know. What's up with that?
That's scary.
Wow.
And we talked a lot about how, you know, I basically said, you know, people are always concerned about, you know, how do we measure how many people listen, or, you know, what's the importance of growing your podcast and that sort of stuff. And I, you know, I always say, get into podcasting. It's like we have this very high, you know, the we don't care factor. You know, it's, we're doing it because it's something we like to do. We do it because we know there's other people that are interested in the same stuff we are. And it's just one of those, you have to really have that high tolerance of, I don't care. you know, if people listen to it, well, then you've done a good job. If people don't listen to it, well, you know, then stop doing it if you get tired of it. But I think, you know, you really have to have a strong stomach, because you're not going to see big numbers very fast in podcasting.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we talked a lot about, don't just put your podcast in the iTunes store and forget it, because nobody will ever find it.
Well, it's like anything else. You got to promote it. I mean, my son and I did a podcast review of Cory Doctorow's new book, Homeland, which is very good, by the way. And he lives in London, but he's on a 22 or 24 city tour to pump the book. And so you think, geez, even a guy like that with a lot of name recognition and, he posts on Boing Boing and all that, he even has to go out and hype his book.
Oh, sure.
So it's the same thing with a podcast. You can't just expect that people are going to discover it.
And we talked a lot about it, from a marketing standpoint, because brands do podcasts now, and it's a great brand enhancer. And it is just not a standalone medium. It's great in tandem with other marketing efforts that you're using. I never hang my hat on a podcast simply because it tends to be very focused. It's harder to find. It's not as easy to access, or perceived as easy to access. It really is easier to access most of the time than TV or radio, but it's different. It's just, you've got a growth cycle here. So
the new iOS app though, well, it's not that new. The podcast app sure helps a lot. And
sure, it helps. It helps a little bit. Sure.
Is there a comparable thing to that on Android, I assume? Or?
Oh yeah.
Okay. There's a lot.
Lots of
them.
Yeah.
If you go to the Minovate site, on the right sidebar down below, there's a bunch of podcatcher clients that you can see with links and so on for your platform. But
we have a site.
It's called a website.
We do.
I'm glad you reminded me. I haven't visited that sucker in a while.
Yeah, we know. Anyway, so Digital River, I haven't been able to talk to my neighbor, John Ebert, up the street. This guy runs Latin America and Asia Pacific for Digital River.
Have a job?
Oh God, yes. Yeah, the guy's a machine. He's a great guy. But yeah,
didn't affect any of the Twin Cities employees, which kind of surprised me because it was a pretty good sized whack, wasn't it? How many?
Yes.
How many or what percentage was it? Do you recall?
No, I don't. I'd have to go look at the article, but it was. They're going to close some offices. They shut down some servers in different parts of the world. So
700 people. That's local. That's local numbers. It doesn't really say how many got laid off, does it? Well, anyway.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it doesn't give a number.
What I spoke to a former Digital River employee just yesterday, and she hasn't been there in some years, but I said, now, what's the deal? Is Joel Ronning, I mean, he's not CEO anymore. Is he like still on the board? And she said, nope, he's gone. He's out of there. He's not even on the board anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're in sort of major fix-it mode. The guy who's their COO is actually a former Net Perceptions guy.
You knew him, or you know him, right?
I met him. I don't really know him well, and I'm blanking on his name right now. Tom. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, John Roberts worked with him at Net Perceptions.
Okay.
And the CEO who's in there now, I don't even really know who that is. I don't know where he comes from, but anyway, it's a new management team.
Yep.
So they had a horrible quarter, apparently.
Well, and it's been interesting because I've talked to a lot of different people who have said that with the availability of major network storage capability and then technologies to sell downloads, that's getting easier and easier for companies to do it themselves.
Yep.
I'm going to store my stuff at Amazon S3 and I'm going to replicate it everywhere. I'm going to sign up with Akamai and because now they'll do both application serving and file serving, and they've got, like 20,000 servers around the world. So it's getting easier and cheaper to do it. So that's got to be tough for Digital River to compete.
Yeah, I don't think they expanded their business into they're too much of a one-trick pony, for many, many years. And, and isn't Amazon itself like their biggest real threat? I mean,
Amazon Web Services, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, as far as, digital downloads, how do they compete against something like that? I don't know.
I don't know. It's tough. Well, so Tim, Mr. I follow Best Buy closely. You're very aware of what's going on. So did you put this link in here about the Best Buy's Hubert Joly will be keynoting the MHTA Spring Conference?
I did not. That was a Mr. Phil Wilson.
Really?
Yeah.
Johnny oh. on the spot, who sent us an email, which I didn't put into the show notes.
That's right.
Phil okay. actually didn't put them into the show notes. I did, but it was Phil's link.
All right.
You know, and I was looking at Hubert Joly is going to be keynoting the spring MHTA conference, which is what, the 30th of April.
Yeah.
And I was just reading his bio, and did you guys look at this? He is a graduate of École des Hautes Études Commerciales de Paris. HEC Paris.
Oh, yeah.
Who's elected a global leader for tomorrow by the World Economics Forum and is a knight in the French National Order of Merit. And the nice. One that he's also endeared himself to millions of children with his role as Lumiere in.
Oh, my God.
This joke is just terrible. I liked your snarky comment with the email when you passed along this link, though.
Yeah. It's like MHTA is really going out on a limb here and announcing their.
Well, no, I think it's going to be interesting. He is known as a turnaround guy, so it'll be interesting right. to see, because by April 30th, what will have transpired with Mr. Schultz and, you know, his attempted buyout of the company. So
well interesting to see. And he was with McKinsey and Company for 13 years doing high-tech financial services and luxury businesses, it says.
The guy's no slouch. There's no doubt about that. So
And he's a nice guy. You know, we met him on the plane to CES. And, you know, as I've said, I'm betting the company will be private, certainly by then. And I'm also betting from everything I'm reading and hearing that they're probably going to keep him on. You know, I mean, that sounds like a good bet to me. So,
well, they need more regional sales managers.
You know, I think it's a little early to say.
I think Schultz will get Ron Johnson to come back to Minneapolis and run Best Buy. Because his gig down in Dallas isn't going very well.
No, it's not, unfortunately.
Yeah,
and I want the guy to be wildly successful. He's a really great guy.
Yeah, that's why he'll be a great turnaround guy for Best Buy.
Right.
You guys know everybody. I don't know.
I'm just kidding. He was the Apple Store guy, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
he ran the Apple Store. Well,
and unfortunately, he had to finally admit that sales are going to be part of JCPenney going forward.
Exactly.
That's the front page of the paper had the big post-it note on it. It say 30% to 50% off at Penny's, you know, and say, hey, wait a minute. I thought they weren't going to do that.
They weren't going to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. But then let's not get into that, cause we'll talk about that forever. But the thing here about Code 42, being ranked by Forbes as one of the most promising. Actually, first off, we're going to put a link in the show notes to this list, but there's a list of these most promising companies, and I can't believe how many companies I've never seen before. And this
Anytime
is actually
Fitness is number 14, actually.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go through strange. This list just to look at these different companies and see who they are and so forth. But yeah, there's Code 42, number 53.
Yep.
It's right too bad on. They're not 42. That would be kind of.
Yeah, wouldn't that be? Wouldn't that be
cool? Nice. Yeah,
that would be.
That would, or 41. Be, you know,
that would be a conspiracy. Maybe a coincidence. I don't know. No, we'll have to name the show something else. That's we used that last week. Okay.
Yeah. No more. No more. Phil looks like Jimmy Stewart gag.
Yeah. What's up? Yeah. What? That was weird.
That was weird. Well, you know what? Hey, I got to come up with something. You guys go about your business. I gotta create an image and a, you know, whatever.
just use the comic cover you designed for us. That's always a good one. So
that was fun. Yeah, that was a fun.
Oh man,
fun
yeah, cover. That's nice.
So anyway, yeah, that was an interesting article. There's not much more to that as far as talking about Code 42, because they're number 53 on the list, so they're far from highlighted by Forbes. But
right,
that's interesting. And then. I'm sure Tim wants to talk about Amy Poehler and the Best Buy Super Bowl ad, right?
Yeah, I thought it was just terrible.
It was.
Really? It was really. I was shocked.
I didn't think it was terrible. I just think it was like all of the Super Bowl ads this year.
Yeah. No, I thought the ads were really bad. Yeah, as a whole. There were a couple good ones, but most of them were this horrible.
Well, here's the one thing that I'll say, though, about the Amy Poehler ad is that, remember, Best Buy has come up with this over and over and over again, talking about how 80% of consumer electronic purchases are either influenced or decided upon by women.
Yep.
And that's why I thought it was a brilliant strategy to have Amy Poehler, because she's really got a lot of attention. I mean, women, I think she's funny, but women specifically, most of these ads are all guys.
Well, you know, and most ads don't necessarily, especially Super Bowl ads, don't necessarily move product.
Yeah. It's a branding exercise.
I agree with you, Steve. I think there's an opportunity here that this may be one of the more effective Super Bowl ads. Maybe not the most entertaining, but maybe one of the most effective, because it does tap into that consumer, that female focused consumer. And I don't think there's anybody better right now that I can think of, maybe Beyonce, but holds a lot of respect by women. So.
Well, they need to do another commercial, because that one's not going to cut it.
Yeah, I mean, it was sickening the way she came on to the blue shirt guy. I mean, do women like that kind of stuff? Because men were like sticking their fingers down their throat. I would say.
Well, again, I think this is all about shifting the power, because when you know, if you're either a non-technical person or you're a woman that is intimidated by guys who claim or come across like they know everything about technology, you don't shop there. I mean, you just don't want to go in. And from that standpoint, that's what I think the whole thing about the come on was all about, was it was about shifting the power.
I don't know. I guess I didn't feel it was so much of a come on. It was, some harmless flirting in and around that, but I think it was more, sarcasm and wit myself. So,
what is Phil?
Women very rarely come on to me, so it's not a problem.
Yeah, how would you know? You were going after that waitress pretty good though the other day.
Oh, would you stop?
That's who he was. He probably got a bigger piece of cake because of that too.
Yeah, God, did you
I don't
ever?
Think it, I don't think it could have gotten to be a bigger piece of cake. That thing was huge.
Oh my God.
And for those of you listening, Phil was licking his plate.
I loved chocolate. I thought it was funny. We all got normal stuff, hamburgers or what did you have, Graham? Like a breakfast burrito or something?
An awesome breakfast burrito. Yeah.
And so we get these big things, and Phil gets a salad, and then he's the only one that orders a huge. Think a cake. It's hilarious.
But he did that because he ordered the salad.
It does make some sort of sense.
Well, yeah.
I get the logic.
I don't think exactly, the salad that comes in a bowl the size of size of your face is necessarily the best diet salad.
That's right.
Hey, could you bring me a half a cake?
Oh, and then they put the sauce, they squiggled the sauce all over the plate, which is why you licked it. I don't blame you.
That's right. All right. Well, here's
I didn't actually put my face in the plate, just to give you an idea.
That's right.
We should have some music for a segment that we'll call the Borscht Security Alert.
Yes, there we go.
Okay, because here it comes.
Okay, Steve,
here it comes.
What is the security alert of the week?
Okay, so the security alert is, if you are a Windows user using Firefox or an OS X user using Safari,
we feel sorry for you.
No, yeah. Besides that,
you should be using Google Chrome on both.
That's right.
On both platforms.
But Adobe issued an emergency flash update for attacks on Windows and Macs, and we're going to put a link in the show notes. Don't ever, 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 ever load flash if you get a pop-up that says, hey, you got to load flash. Just don't load flash. Actually, go to Adobe's site. I'll put the link in the show notes to where you go directly to, and it'll sense your platform, and then you can download the flash and install it. But it's a zero-day exploit, and they came out with this emergency update because it was such a glaring hole. And, of course, you may be one of the people that just... turn flash off. I don't know.
I don't use flash. So I use Chrome for that reason, because Chrome has flash included in it.
And they keep it updated.
Yes. So it's Google's deal. Yep. So I don't use flash. And I use Firefox for web development too, but I don't watch Flash stuff in Firefox.
Yeah.
And if I need to see something Flash video, go to YouTube or whatever, I'm watching it in Chrome.
I always use Chrome. Yep.
So
plus it's faster.
I have to use Safari on a couple of things simply.
Because no, I do too.
Compatibility.
Sure. Yeah.
It's right. Really frustrating. I sure wish Chrome would be universally accepted across all of these platforms because it's just really a pain.
Well, but, you know, Google's like the small company out in the West Coast. People don't really,
They don't think it's going to catch on.
They don't think it's going to catch on, you know, so they support Internet Explorer, you know, of course, because Microsoft is such a fine and stable company. But not okay, now, you know, browser.
So we also need a sound for sarcasm alert.
Yes, exactly.
did you see what they did to Yammer?
What? Who?
They whacked off 20% of the marketing department at Yammer.
What? Who? Microsoft?
Oh, yes.
And didn't even tell
yes.
the people first.
They found
they
out
read
through
about
TechCrunch.
It on TechCrunch. Yeah. I kid you not. Yes. That's how that's classy funny. Microsoft is.
Oh, geez.
Oh my God.
Jeez Louise. Yeah.
Moving uptown. Man. Good Lord.
Isn't it something? It's times are tough, but still, it's You can't just dump all over people.
It's like firing people when they're on vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you come back and you have no office. What the hell?
I know. Well, let's, I have not read anything. Graham, you sent this out, right, about the, is it Ouya? Ouya?
Yeah.
Ouya.
Ouya. Ouya. O-U-Y-A. Ouya. Now, I have to admit, I don't know anything about it, except I read one article. That it was an Android game thing, right?
Tim knows all about it, but what I will say is it's one of only two Kickstarter projects that had goals of 750,000 or more that were successful. And that was several months ago, right, Tim, when they raised some ungodly amount.
8.6 million they've raised so far.
Yep. Not to rub it in, it was after the Pebble Watch, and I think they're going to ship before most people get the Pebble Watch.
God, Jesus, that just pisses me
Doesn't
off.
Doesn't that really, this really get your goat, Phil?
I sent out an email this morning, as a matter of fact, to the Pebble people, and said, when is my Pebble going to ship? I hope it's before Apple's watch comes out.
Whoa!
My watch.
Nice.
Well, listen, I have Skype group calling, so we can all get on a group call, and you can show us your watch when it shows.
I don't know. I think we'll be on some sort of other holograph platform by that time. So,
yeah. Well, so now, Tim, since you're Android through and through, I mean, is this game console, will it run Android games just like a phone would or a tablet?
Yes, but they're going to have their own app store.
Okay.
And they're going to kind of vet it like Apple does.
So you could optimize games for it then, right?
Well, yeah, you'll have to because the games are optimized for touch, not for a controller. So they have
a
traditional controller setup. So developers will have to change their games over. But what's interesting is that this is an open platform that you can, just like on a phone, tick a box in the settings and install any kind of software, Android software, from any place. So you could run, for instance, the Xbox Media Center, which just shipped for Android, and you can turn this thing into a home media server.
And it streams live TV and movies, by the way.
Yep. So it's an interesting platform. It's only $100. And what's also interesting is, unlike game consoles, which, you know, get refreshed every 5 or 6 years or so, sometimes longer, this one's going to be updated every year, just like a phone.
Well, and I just looked at one of these articles. It's now going to be sold at Amazon, Best Buy, Target, and GameStop this June.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, well, so I think this is going to really cause a lot of hurt on the Xbox and the PS, you know, 4 or whatever the next PlayStation is going to be called, and Nintendo's Wii, because it's a lot cheaper. The games will be a lot cheaper. They're not going to be $50-$60. They're going to be, you know, probably $1.99. And, you know, it's just, it's probably set up for casual games just like phones are.
Well,
so
see,
you don't have to be a real hardcore gamer to get into it.
Well, but here's the thing though. I mean, it's, I can't believe that the graphics co-processing is going to be anywhere near what an Xbox or a Sony PlayStation is.
Oh, it won't be. But that's not the point. I mean, in the last console round, the least powerful one, the Nintendo Wii, just because it had a innovative way of...
Yeah, it was a popcorn item, yeah.
Yeah. So, and it wasn't necessarily... Well, I guess it was the cheapest, but at launch, it wasn't the cheapest. I think it was priced around the same as what an Xbox cost. But, you know, I don't think a lot of people are looking for that fully immersive game experience anymore.
No.
So, there will be a market for the hardcore gamer. They'll probably still play on PCs, you know? Maybe some will play on the Xbox and the PlayStation. But I think a lot of people, this will open up a lot of new entrants and a lot of new developers, I think. You won't necessarily have to be one of these big development houses to get a game, you know, out in front of a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to take gaming to a larger mainstream.
Well, I think it's going to do the same thing for gaming what the App Store did for app development.
Well, and it has AirPlay and HDMI built into it. So, you know, in theory, you could just run the thing standalone and pump it through your Apple TV and display it on your TV. So this is really interesting.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, they sure ramped up the manufacturing fast, but I guess $8 million will help you do that. Well, and they may have raised some VC money beyond that, too. So they've obviously run very, very fast, and they certainly are showing up Pebble as far as getting to market faster. You know, this is pretty amazing.
Wow. Well, we're going to have to keep a real close eye on that. Just to see what's going on. So, this was something I thought was kind of interesting. This week, Google updates Hangouts, lets you adjust bandwidth using a slider, and it adds an audio-only mode. Is this a potential Skype killer?
Maybe.
I don't know if Skype killer, but, I mean, yeah, it's always a challenger. There's no doubt about that.
More problems for Microsoft. Oh, my God. They don't need this.
Yeah.
Did they add that to the mobile app, too?
Which?
So the ability to do, say, audio-only Hangouts on your phone?
Because that would be great, yeah.
If they didn't, the Skype will still have that edge because, you know, you can call people on your phone with Skype, you know, audio or video too. I mean, if you have the cameras and such.
Well, so
So for doing stuff like this, I think that that it's definitely a contender, and we should try it, you know, to see if it's any better than Skype is.
Yep.
You know.
Well, so one thing I also wanted to mention along these same lines, I just stuck a link in here, is the WebRTC, which is an open standard, the real-time communications, it's essentially audio and video without a plug-in inside a browser. And I'm going to put a link in here to an article on The Verge that there was a conversation between Chrome and Firefox that was them demonstrating video and audio in a browser, in their respective browsers, I should say. And I think this is just going to absolutely revolutionize communications because, I mean, you're not going to have anybody learn how to use an app or do anything relative to being able to do screen sharing and doing video conferencing and even audio calls. So I'm pretty excited about that. Now, if we can just get Apple and Microsoft on board, we're dancing. Just that Chrome is using, or Google's using, what's the video standard? I'm thinking V8, but that's not it.
I could have had a V8.
Yeah, no, what's the video standard that they're using that they had problems because H.264 as a codec was licensed?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure Graham knows though. He's up on all that.
Right.
So,
video.
Well,
codecs.
It's WebM. It's a royalty-free video format. Oh. And
thank goodness for Google.
Yes, huh? One of the things I got to point out that we, you know, during that JMU meetup or that we did on podcasting, somebody asked about sound quality and that sort of thing, and I always defer to Steve on that stuff and say, listen, if you want to hear about sound quality for podcasting, yeah, talk with Steve Borsch.
Talk to the man.
But carve out an afternoon for
Oh, thanks a lot. You know, you sound like my wife who always, when I start to explain something, she just looks at me now and her shorthand is Genesis. And the first time she did that, I said, what do you mean? And she goes, you're starting at the book of Genesis. Would you at least start at the New Testament?
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. All right. And my whole thing is, hey, if you understand it conceptually, then you'll get it.
No doubt.
But if I just tell you the five things to make it work, then you're going to do those five things. But as soon as there's a change, you're not going to know conceptually what's happening, and you're not going to know how to fix it.
That's why we call you, Steve.
I know. Shit.
I feel so sorry for Steve because between him and Tim, they're always getting calls from Graham and I. It's like, okay, so what?
Yeah, well, the good news is I like helping people, so.
You are a giver. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, man. Well, anyway.
I bet Steve's got a spare DVI cable for you, Phil.
He asked me by email. I actually don't, believe it or not.
I did track one down from another friend, though. So
did you? Good.
Nice. It's like, I've lost my DVI cable and I can't get up.
I am so sorry.
That's all right. So what else? So we got it. See how we do it on time, boys. I don't want to, you know, keep.
No, we're fine. We're at about 37 minutes.
Oh, wait a minute. We had to talk about some sort of connection to Apple.
Yeah, okay. I put this in there. I thought this was.
Go ahead. You
know, this went into one of my predictions about the wearable stuff.
You're right. You
know, Pebble style stuff, and this ex Apple designer has a nice post about what Apple would do with their iWatch or whatever they call the thing. So I thought it was just interesting.
And this guy, by the way, Bruce Tognazzini, is a user interface and user experience expert. And he wrote this really great book called Tog on Design. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
No, I just thought it was an interesting story, and it just kind of corroborated where I think that Apple is headed. I think they'll come out with a really compelling product that will make you want to use all of their devices together. Can you imagine some sort of watch that would be connected to, say, iCloud and would be able to accept information that was pushed from the cloud to your watch?
Awesome. It'd be awesome. What it'll
probably require is, you know,
some sort of
iOS device that it would be tethered to, right? So it would take the existing iPhone or iPad connection and then just push it to your watch.
Well, just remember, though, that the iPhone 5 and so all future models, and the same thing, I think, with the Galaxy S3 and the Nexus, what is it? Nexus 4 is that they've all gone with Bluetooth 4, and it is a low power Bluetooth, most importantly, which means that low power devices can use it, which... I'd much rather tether to Bluetooth than try to deal with Wi-Fi, or somehow tethering to the phone in another way.
I'll be glad to share that experience with you. My Pebble watch. Oh, wait a minute. I don't have it yet.
Hey, I have the wristband for you. The giveaway. I got.
Oh, well, there you go. You got a
wristband.
I don't know. My dog.
Sweat out your long wait.
My daughter's got the wristband with a little with her iPod Nano on it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
As a watch, that looks pretty cool. But
well, and this photo in the GigaOm post is pretty sexy looking too of what an iWatch might look like. You know.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, I think what you guys were talking about, to me, it sounds like it could be the way you would get smart notifications. You know, from. You know, a future development that Apple and others are working on is, you know, that just notifications of stuff you need to know when you need to know it. You know, it just kind of learns about you, this cloud-based platform, and sends you stuff, you know, that it knows you need to know, you know, right.
based on your location.
Right. Yeah. Based on a lot of things. Yeah. Not just location, but, you know, totally different from all these push notifications that got totally out of hand. And pretty much all of us just shut them all off, you know, because they're annoying. But smart notifications is a whole different thing. Intelligent notifications.
Well, see, what I would love is I'd love to have a watch that would vibrate alerts. So I can't tell you how many times where I've been in a meeting or I've been at a play or a concert or something where all of a sudden my phone goes and I think, geez, I got to look at the thing. But I know if I look at it, the light's going to be so bright. So I try to hide it and try to peek at it, but it's still glowing. And how great it would be to have a watch that would vibrate and show you what the notification was.
Yeah.
Something as simple as that would be awesome.
Yep. Just a gentle, non-noisy thing.
Well, you can do that with your pet. Wait a minute. No, I don't have that.
Well, see what I really want though, is I really want electrical shock capability so that instead of a Facebook poke, you can actually send somebody that to wake them up.
Some sort of Pavlovian thing.
Well, especially like with my kids, Dad, will you get me up at 6:30? Sure. They'll just zap them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I haven't spent much time on this Freedom Pop. You guys put a link in here. Somebody put a link in here about they plan an LTE clip to give free LTE to iPad and Android tablets.
Yeah, I've been following these guys for a while. They're a Sprint. What is it? What do they call that?
WiMAX.
Yeah.
Or MVNO. Yeah.
Right. So
mobile virtual operator.
Network operator. Yep.
Yeah. So they've been out with the WiMAX proposition here for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months now, and it's basically it's 500 megabytes for free a month. And you can pay some nominal charges to get more data than that. And they have a sleeve for an iPod Touch, which turns it effectively into a iPhone. They also have the, you know, dongles for your PC or a MiFi sort of deal that they charge you for, but they'll refund if you send it back. So it's kind of a weird, they call it a deposit. So you give them a $99 deposit. And then you use a service, and you could use it for free if you use 500 megabytes or less a month, right? So it could be a good backup for a MiFi kind of solution. But they are moving from WiMAX to LTE as Sprint, rolls out their LTE network. So I thought this was kind of interesting as a way to retrofit a lot of, WiFi only tablets to use, LTE.
Well, now I'm assuming you give them a credit card, and then if you go over the 500, they'll automatically charge you, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay,
and you can get a 2 gig plan. I think it's like under $10 a month, so it's like really, really reasonable. And it is available here in the Twin Cities if you wanted to try it. And it's not available everywhere.
Is it? Have you done it, or do you?
No,
know
I have. I have not. I've been tempted because I've always wanted to have that capability, and I didn't want to necessarily have to go out and purchase a MiFi and then some sort of data plan. I'd like to do it as a kind of a pay as you go kind of thing.
Right.
So it's either this or like what Graham does with his you still have that Virgin Mobile.
Yeah, I've got a Virgin Mobile MiFi. Yeah, but I don't like it much, and it was close to $150 when I bought it, and you gotta fill it up with like $20 at a time, or maybe you can do $10, but it's like you don't get crap for $10 as far as bandwidth. So I do it $20 a time, and it's kind of hard to follow how much you're using, and it seems like the $20 runs out really fast. And we use it when we travel, and I'm not really all that happy with it. So I'll be ready to try out Freedom Pop myself for sure.
Well, I do the $20 a month for 2 gigs on Verizon with my iPad. And the thing that drives me just insane is that I can't roll over unused time.
Right.
It just drives me insane.
Yeah.
And so I just, I know I'd love to buy a MiFi where I could just say, okay, here's $50, and then just charge my credit card when I run out.
Well, that's what I do with the Virgin Mobile, and it works okay. But you know, you got to be. It uses the Sprint network, right. So we've been places where we can't get on.
Yeah,
you know. Yep. Obviously, you run into that problem. But this Freedom Pop sounds like a really easy to use service. So it would be less hassle and lower cost. So
yeah. So
You
know? I just logged into their site, and so you, the 500 megabyte is free. And it's 2 cents a megabyte over if you go over the 500. There's a 2 gigabyte plan, which is normally $17.99 a month, but for a limited time only, it looks like it's free for the first month. And then it's a penny a megabyte over that. So even if they charge you the $18 a month for 2 gigs, that would probably be enough mobile data. They also have a 4 gig plan for $28.99 a month.
Well, Phil, do you use Sprint in this market, right?
Yes, I do.
And how's the coverage?
You know, it's choppy. It's not as good as you'd really like it to be, but it's fine. Okay. I mean, I get what I need most of the time. There are a lot of times that it's running very slow, but I'm really looking forward to eventually LTE getting here. But you know, we're somewhere after Lubbock, so right. I don't know when we actually get that, but. I am somewhat envious of people that have Verizon because that tends to move very quickly, but I also don't. I have no limits, so I have no caps. You know, that's the great thing about Sprint. Yeah. It is unlimited, and you know, hopefully they'll be able to continue to do that. If not, we'll see.
Wow.
Well, that's a ringing endorsement for for the service here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess I can't. Oh yeah, it's great.
That's okay.
It's all right. You know. You know, let's put it in context. I always go back to that Louis C.K. bit that
yes.
that whole
oh, God.
You know, you're sitting in a flying chair. Okay? It's okay. You know, it's all relative. Yes, I am connected. It's lightning fast compared to taking a wagon train across the U.S.
You know, I posted that video and NBC's taken it down.
They have?
Yep. I can't find it anywhere.
Wow.
And but for those listening, I'll see if I can find it for the show notes. But it's Louis C.K. He's on Leno?
Conan,
that's right. I'm sorry. So it wasn't NBC, whoever. Maybe he was on NBC. But anyway.
He was on NBC, yeah.
He's talking about one of the first Wi-Fi flights that he was on, and the guy next to him's on Wi-Fi, and then pretty soon they make an announcement. We're so sorry. The wireless internet is down, and the guy next to him goes, oh, great. You know, and Louis C.K. is just like, I can't believe it. It's like all of a sudden it's a right. You know, you're in a flying chair at 35,000 feet.
Flying chair.
On the internet, and it
Give
goes
it a
down.
Minute.
Yeah, exactly. That was just a hilarious bit. Oh, my gosh. Well, speaking of hilarious bits.
Is that a better ringing endorsement, Tim? I don't know. Did that help at all?
Yeah, I guess. Nah, I don't know. Really. I'm still skeptical. I'll wait for their next deal.
But yeah, you're on T-Mobile, so.
Yeah, T-Mobile's good. Good service.
Well, the thing that I love the best is, and you'll like this, Tim, maybe I mentioned this last week, but CenturyLink stopped at the house. And it turns out they've got fiber out on Mitchell Road. And
that's what you mentioned last week.
Did I mention it last week? Yeah.
You did. Any update to that?
Well, so here's the update. I pinged one of the regional managers about how, you know, can I get the 40 meg down and, you know, whatever it is, 8 up or something. And the answer is no.
That's for you, Borsch.
Yeah.
We've heard all about you.
Yeah.
But, you data hog.
That's right. But the kicker is how hilarious it was.
Didn't know the guys from CenturyLink were Asian. Okay, go on.
Sounded like Jamaican to me. Wait a minute. Yeah, okay. Like that VW commercial. Oh, God, that was funny.
Now, don't be teasing Tim on his impressions. in all seriousness, it's just because they do the Dish Network thing, they start going through the different packages. And I swear to God, if it's Tuesday and the guy that came up with the packages had onions on his cheeseburger, it's different. I mean, oh my God, trying to make head nor tails out of anything. And that's why I was looking at this Freedom Pop thing thinking, you know, is it one of these, sign up now and you get 6 months at this price. And then it goes up to $9,000 a month. You know, it's just, Because that seems to be the marketing du jour approach is, you know, let's just get them in with some super low price so they can try the service and hope that they don't remember that 6 months in we're going to charge them or we're going to raise the price dramatically. Because that's the thing with what CenturyLink's doing with this new internet. So anyway, so what about events? Is there anything new that's coming up?
I did put the MHTA Spring Conference.
Oh, good, in, good, good.
Right? So that's on the 30th of April.
Are they going to drop the price?
No, it's still $575 or something like that.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
It's a hefty little dog. No.
Well, they do show, though, that individual tickets for members are $135. And they do have some, you know, approachable membership prices, especially if you're a startup. So maybe that's an approach.
Yeah, you have a startup level now that's reasonably priced for membership.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that is correct. The MHTA member price is $135, non-member is $185. So that's still that's a good deal. So.
Yeah, that's not bad because it used to be $500 or $600.
Yeah, right? I saw that $575 number. That's for a package of five tickets. So my apologies.
That's okay, Phil. We'll forgive you.
I sure hope they don't do it down in the lower sub-basement at the convention center.
Yeah, that was a drag, like wasn't it? You know? Yeah, that was not, was not good.
Lower sub-basement.
Yeah.
It's a convention center, guys. How much, what do you need? It's not like there's windows on the top floor.
Well, it just was weird. I'd rather they do it on the main floor like they used to. But we'll see.
We'll see. And so I heard there's some mobile event going on.
Mobile event coming up on the 21st of March at the Earl Brown Heritage Center. It's Mobile March, ladies and gentlemen. So check it out. The agenda is posted and up and rolling. We've got some good stuff in the area of business and gaming and mobile development, and we would love to see you there.
Fabulous.
And marketing, right? Mobile marketing for sure, huh?
Oh, yeah. That's part of the business track. Yep.
You bet. Yeah.
And there's still nothing on Minibar having a location yet, right?
I've not seen anything.
Okay.
I'm sure that when it's out, they're going to send us all an email.
And that's coming up on April 6th. So it's not
right. I guess I'd be shocked if it wasn't Best Buy, but you never know. Maybe they're not as friendly to allowing community events there.
No, you know what? I'll take it back. It says Minibar April 6th at Best Buy HQ.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Ah, okay. So
just this is new. I don't know when this got
so
placed.
So Lumiere is still welcoming as ever.
Well, it was Robert Stevens really
I have
that
converted you.
Yeah, but it was really Robert Stevens that made this happen. Right?
Yep.
I mean,
it was. And since he's been gone, it's not so easy to locate events there because one that I was involved in recently, which you heard about, which I won't name, tried to get in there and they got stonewalled somebody. And they had to go elsewhere. So it's not so easy to get permission to hold a big event there. Well, and it must involve money too. I mean, they can't do these things for free.
It's the problem with doing events at Best Buy, and because we've always wanted to bring Mobile March back to Best Buy. I think that's one of the best locations we've ever had, and we really enjoyed it there. It was really laid out well for us. But for Mobile March, it was a matter of we wanted to move it into the week, you know, during the week, and rather than on a weekend. Yep.
That's a problem.
That's just possible to do at Best Buy. Doing it unless it's a Best Buy event, it's too busy there during the day. There's security issues they have to worry about. And it's just very difficult to get in there during the week.
Yeah. So Minibar being a Saturday event works fine for them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, so I just have to end with this quick story here. So I've got a buddy who lives out in Waltham, Massachusetts, which is, 30 miles from Boston.
22 inches of snow.
Well, so there's like 650,000 people without power. Yeah, and so I sent my buddy an email saying, hey, how are you guys doing out there? And I sent it to him last night at 11 o'clock, and it just came in. And he said, smartest thing I've ever done, went to Sam's Club and bought a natural gas generator. He spent $3,500, bought a whole house generator like a week ago. And so he's got power. He says neighbors have come over to hang out. Oh my God, what a drag.
Well, I hope he didn't hook it up himself. You wouldn't want the whole house blowing up.
If he did it a week ago,
he'd get one of those hooked up, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure if he did it a week ago, he had somebody come out and help him.
A plumber or whatever, yeah.
Right.
Huh.
So,
did you hear that they outlawed anybody on the streets? It's like, and the penalty is up to a year in prison. So don't be driving in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
Emergency or media people were allowed to be out. And obviously
that Boston mayor is a hard ass. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was beyond. It's all Massachusetts roads. It's a statewide travel ban.
Yep. Can you imagine if your wife is about to give birth? I mean, how nervous a lot of people must be.
Oh, geez.
You know?
Yep.
Wow.
Wow. Well, on a high note, we're going to get a little bit of snow tomorrow, but we're okay here in the Twin Cities.
Right. You know, it's a Minnesota podcast when it ends with a discussion of weather.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's right.
The weather.
Yeah.
Yep.
Weather.
We got to talk about the weather.
Well, speaking of ending the podcast, we'll plan on seeing you guys next week on
the Minnovate Gang podcast.
Yes, sirree.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.